Good evening. This talk's going to be based on an old story that you all know in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. But I think it's interesting sometimes what can happen when you take a story completely apart, and apply it to something else. And this is a story of David and Goliath. And this talk is about killing giants. You know, we're all going to have giants in our lives, whether they be physical circumstances that confront us or work circumstances that confront us, tensions of one kind or another that may not have any much to do with seemingly with religion. And then we may have some giant religious questions that come up and confront us from time to time, or temptations. And those giants are real giants, and they have to be confronted. And in this story, I think we learn how you kill giants, okay? There are some very basic principles on how you kill giants, and we're going to try to pick those out of here. So that's where we're going. In 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter, we find Goliath in verse 8, standing and cried to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." A little gamble involved here, a little come down and fight. We all have things that are threatening us, and they certainly had this giant that is threatening them. Sometimes the giant is without us, and sometimes the giant is within us. But we all have giants that we're going to have to fight. And sometimes it can get very, very, very personal. In the later in the book, in the same chapter, in verse 42, the Philistines certainly got personal with David, and sometimes our giants get very personal. Philistine Goliath said, "When the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog thou comest to me with staves?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods." Our giants get very, very personal. They get down inside us, and they cause us great pain. So we're going to look at this story and figure out if there are significant and progressive steps that we take when we go about to kill these giants that are going to confront us. Because you may not confront a 9-foot-9-inch giant in your lifetime, but you are going to confront giants. You are going to have times in your life where there are big obstacles that you have to overcome. And David is going to show us how we do that in this story. So we start out, and I just have a rambling group of progressive thoughts from this story that you can follow along in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. But the first is, in order to, and this might seem obvious to you, but in order to kill a giant, you have to recognize that you have a giant that's an enemy of yours. You don't go about killing a giant. David was not concerned about killing a giant when he was out with the flock. He was not concerned. He didn't know he had an enemy. Didn't know Israel had an enemy. Didn't know this was going on. He wasn't concerned. But the first step in killing a giant, and it seems obvious but it's not, is recognizing that you have a giant. You don't have a little guy to whip on. You have a giant in your life that's going to take some doing to whip. We have a giant in our life, both incidents and a person, a personality, because in Peter talks about in the 5th chapter describing the devil, who is our adversary, the devil as a roaring lion walking about seeing whom he may devour. So in that case, God has defined and identified the giant for us. But you may have giants in your life that are somewhat different than that, obstacles that you may need to overcome. But you need to identify and understand that you recognize this giant and evaluate and know your enemy. In 1 Samuel 17, chapter verses 4 and 5, it says, "There went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of brass upon his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass." Got to figure out how far I'm reading here. Must be reading farther than I wrote. "He had greaves of brass upon his legs, a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him." So we have to evaluate our enemy as to who they are. This guy is 9 feet, 9 inches tall, standing still under a basketball rim. He is 3 inches short. He would scrape his head on the little things that hang down and hold the rim, hold the net. He would scrape his head on that, standing flat-footed. That's how big this guy was. And if you want to know about his strength, we have a thing that we use about that when I'm talking to people about back pain. That if you have a ruler, I used to do this with patients, you have a ruler and you can hold a pound easily, but if you put a pound on the end of a foot-long ruler and you hang on to the 1 inch, you cannot hold that because of the leverage that's involved. And that's the way your back has problems, because the leverage is all wrong, and that's why so many people have back problems. Well, I want you to think about picking up something with a spear with 15-pound head on it. 15 pounds. He didn't just pick it up to hold it over his shoulder. He's going to throw this thing. 15 pounds at the end of a spear, I don't think I could pick up 15 pounds at the end of a spear. The leverage would be phenomenal. This was a huge, huge, huge man. He wore a coat of armor that was 125 pounds heavy. So we have to evaluate and we have to know our enemy, which is sometimes easier said than done. In 2 Corinthians 11th chapter, Paul talks about knowing our enemy and how difficult this can be, because at the end of that little passage ending in verse 14, he said, "Don't be surprised, for Satan himself can be transformed or look like an angel of light." So we need to evaluate and know our enemy. Back to 1 Samuel 17. We're not going to stray very far from that. We know David comes and he sees this giant, and he's got the whole army stymied. They're sitting and looking at him, and no one's doing anything. And he starts making noise, and he starts asking, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine? And his brother, in verse 28, Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." Don't let other people tell you what can't be beat. Why was Eliab angry here? Why was he angry? Because David was saying what he wished he'd had the courage to say, and what every other man in that army wished he'd had the courage to say. He said it. But don't let others tell you that your giant can't be killed, because with God, it can be. You know, Job's wife had somewhat the same notion. Said, I don't think you can overcome these obstacles. These are huge. You've lost all your possessions. You lost your family. You've lost your health. Just give up. Just give up. Just let the giant win. Don't let others tell you the giant can't be killed. Verse 39. And David girded his sword upon his armor. This is Saul. Let me start to verse 4. Saul armed David with his armor, and he put a helmet of brass upon his head. He armed him with a coat of mail, and David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them." And David put them off him. If people will recognize that you have an obstacle, sometimes they want to tell you how to conquer your obstacle. The way that you go about conquering your giant may be odd to them. It may not be the same way that they would do it. But it's your giant. It's your giant. So conquer it the way you can conquer it. Whip it the way you can whip it, irregardless of what someone else says. You know, and Christians are told that we have that, we are looked at as kind of odd. In 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, beginning with verse 18, it says, "For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. For the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, to the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, the weakness of God is stronger than men. In our religious life, our methods and how we go about things certainly do look odd to the people that we deal with. They would look odd. Christianity is an odd religion. It goes at things a bit different. You would not find a Muslim turning the other cheek or offering his coat with his cloak also. Isn't going to happen. It's a very odd religion as religions go. Okay? And your giant, you may have to go about conquering whatever your obstacles are in a way that looks odd to others. But the important part is that the giant gets conquered. Not how you do it. Verse 37. David said, Moreover, the Lord had delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. Whatever the obstacle, we need to remind ourselves that we're going with God. If God's for us, who can be against us? Whatever the obstacle. Whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's my job, whether it's spiritual in some sense, I have to take him with me. I'm going to spend a lot of time in verse 40. He took his staff, after he put his armor off, he took his staff in his hand. Why? He's used to it. Is he going to beat the giant to death with a staff? Why did he take it? He took his staff in his hand. He's used to it. What we're comfortable with. You know, when I do surgery, I require that the nurse keep a pair of tweezers in my left hand after each and every stitch. Now, I use that about twice or three times during the course of surgery. I'm just much more comfortable. I don't know why. I'm just much more comfortable with that in my left hand while I'm doing surgery. I feel better. And that lets it go better. And so he took the staff with him because it made him comfortable. It was what he was used to. It's not going to be the same approach for everybody. But we need to, when we're confronting our giants, make ourselves as comfortable as possible. It'll be difficult enough without making ourselves uncomfortable. He took his staff in his hand and chose him five smooth stones out of the brook. Chose him. Did you get the impression that David went out and just kind of scooped down bottom of the brook and got five stones? He chose five stones. These five stones were different than the other stones that were there. They were different than those. Out of all the stones, he picked those five stones. Why? If God is with him, is it going to make any difference? Is it going to make any difference at all? Well, we're fighting giants, not tomcats, so you do all you can do first. And he is choosing very carefully because he's going out to fight a giant. He chose him five smooth stones. Why five? That's a first. You know, in guns we have repeaters. I don't know if he had a repeating sling or what he had, but he got five stones. One wasn't going to be enough. You don't trust God? You don't trust God? God's going with you. Why not just take one if you really believe God? We had an interesting experience during our study three months ago. Cheryl said, I heard this thing on television, on the radio. It didn't seem right, but I wanted to ask you about it. And I said, well, what's that? Said, well, and this is interesting how you put scriptures together and you end up with a conclusion. She said, well, this guy on the radio was saying that we should pray for things with trust in God. I agree with that. We should pray for things with trust of God. Therefore, if I trust God, then I should pray for something once. Because to pray for it the second time means I didn't trust the first time. Now, there is taking different ideas in the scripture and putting them together to come up with an obnoxious and inaccurate thought that it's wrong to pray for something twice. We have multiple examples where people prayed over and over and over again and were rewarded for doing so. So trust isn't the issue here. He's used to having five stones. You don't go out to fight lions with the flock of sheep with one stone. He's used to having five stones. That's what he took. Not six, not four. He took five. And he chose him five smooth stones. Why smooth stones? Because they're accurate. You ever skip rocks? What kind of a rock do you pick up to skip? You know, smooth, maybe a little flat. You can get four or five skips out of that if you know what you're doing. And that's the kind you pick up. You don't pick up a round, misshapen, lobby rock and try to skip it across. You don't do that. He picked up five smooth stones to cut through all the distractions, all the air that was in between him and the giant. He picked up five smooth stones to cut through those. You know, Timothy, Paul in talking to Timothy talks about distractions. He said, no man at warreth entangleth himself in the affairs of this life. Now, he doesn't mean he doesn't pay attention to the affairs of this life. Didn't say that. The key word is entangleth. Entangleth. Meaning he gets so involved in the affairs of this life that it distracts him from what his job is, which is to be a soldier. And that's the example he's using. Well, we have to be involved in this life, but we don't want to be distracted when we have this giant that we're taking on. We cut through the distractions to take on the giant, or we're going to be in trouble. And still in verse 40, he took five smooth stones. Stones. Not muffins. Stones. Rock hard. Stones. That's what he took. We're going to fight with the right arms. This is war. We're going to fight with the right tools. And I'm still in 40. And he put them in a bag. Put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even a scrip. You know, they used to have a thing that supposedly they said in the military. I was never in the military. But I think this goes back a ways because I'm not sure it would apply to some of ours today. But they used to have a thing that said, keep your ammo dry. Keep your ammo dry. Be prepared. So he has it in his pocket, in his bag, and he is prepared. In 2 Timothy... Two of 20 and 21. In a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, prepared to every good work. Prepared, preparation to fight our giants. And still in verse 40, I gotta get back there now. Still in verse 40. And his sling was in his hand. Sling was in his hand. He's alert. He's ready. He's not got his sling in his pocket. It's in his hand, ready to go to work. He's ready and ready to go. In Matthew, the 25th chapter, and you would be amazed at how many people you see who... know they have a giant, but just wait till the last minute to prepare for that giant, and then are surprised when they're overcome by the giant. Aren't alert and ready. The 25th chapter of Matthew is the story of the virgins. I don't know that I'll read that. But these virgins were coming to a wedding, and some of them were prepared, and some of them weren't. And the ones that were prepared got to participate in the wedding. The ones that weren't prepared because they had to leave to make last-minute preparations were left out. They weren't alert and ready to what was going on. Some of these I wrote down and some I didn't. In 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, verse 13, it says, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong." But the important part is watch ye. You know what the word vigilant means? Vigilant means you're alert, you're on guard. Happens to be what my name means, okay? You're alert and you're on guard. You're ready. We'll go back to 1 Samuel and start reading in 44. "The Philistine said to David, 'Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls there, to the beasts of the field.' Then said David to the Philistine, 'Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day shall the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands.'" Now I want you to pay attention to what David does. "Came to pass, when the Philistine arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran to meet the Philistine." Hasted toward the giant. I'm not sure I would have done that. Okay? I would have danced a dance, ran around him in circles. I don't know what all I'd have done, but I'm certain I wouldn't have run toward him. Sometimes we overthink. Sometimes we overthink. You know, if David stands back and looks at this giant and really starts calculating how much damage, how little of a 15-pound spearhead has to hit him to do him in, he starts figuring out what the reach of a 9-foot, 9-inch giant is and how close within his sphere of being damaged he's going to be before he can do damage to the giant. If he starts thinking about the giant's shield and how he's going to get around that, he starts thinking about all these things, he's still going to be standing there. Sometimes we overthink. In our obstacles, in our giant killing, we overthink. We're prepared. We thought about it. We're ready to go. 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 Just go. Head on. Do you know how many people you see who are prepared? They've done. They've thought about it. They've done it in their head, but just won't go. An example I thought of is a teenage boy and a girl. He likes this girl. He likes her a lot. He's thought about how he'd like to ask her out, maybe go somewhere. He's done it a million times in his head. Million times in his head. But how many times? It wasn't the right time. Wasn't the right time. Maybe next time. Wasn't the right place. Too many people around. Too little people around. Mostly I'm just scared. Just go. Just go. And don't overthink it. He reached into his bag and took advantage of the preparations that he had made. He was used to having the stones in his bag. That's what they were. And preparations make things easier when you're in crisis mode. They make things easier when you're in crisis mode. He didn't have to think, and I didn't give you the verse for that. Verse 49. He didn't have to think, now where did I put those stones? He put them where he's used to putting those stones. In crisis, preparation and practice carries you through. And so he was used to it. He reached into the bag, and there they were. And then he slang it. Always wonder about that word. Seems like it shouldn't be slang it. Seems like it should be slung it. But it says slang it. He slang it. And how often we just don't go ahead and do it. He used the preparations he had, and he proceeded. And I can't decide. I think it's because of the disdain that the Philistine had for David or for rock, I don't know, why his forehead was uncovered. I don't understand that. Why would you cover all of you with a 125-pound coat, have a shield that's huge with a bearer in front of you, and leave the one of the most vital parts of your anatomy open to attack? I don't really understand that. But he smote the Philistine in the forehead, and the shield didn't do anything because he had had disdain for David. Sometimes these giants fall a lot easier than you think they will. Lots of times these giants turn out to be bullies, loudmouth bullies, and they fall easier than you think they will. You know, when the Israelites people went into the promised land and they marched up to Jericho, they had to look at Jericho and say, there's no way we're going to take that city. It's just not going to happen. Not going to happen. We can't take that city. And they took that city and never fired a shot. Sometimes these giants are much easier to fall than we think they are. He put his hand in his bag, took thence a stone, and slung it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead. This may be where the expression rocks in your head came from, I don't know, but sank into his forehead. This was not a tentative thing. David didn't go at this halfway. There's a lot of force involved here. He resisted to the utmost, and we know what happens. If you resist the devil, he'll flee from you in James. And finally, the devil, in verse 49, fell on his face to the earth. We all have these giants, but I think there are some principles in here of identification, preparation, about how we're going to confront these giants that we have and how we can kill them. But there's one last thing I wanted to tell you, and I promised myself I was going to keep this short tonight. One thing I wanted to tell you of how you beat a giant. This has to do with the playground, okay? If you never want to get beat up on the playground, you always make friends with whom? The biggest person on the playground, okay? You always make friends with the bigger. So if you really want to kill a giant, you can probably ignore most of what I said and just go get a bigger giant. And that's what David did. He went and got a bigger giant. Bigger giant. And he killed Goliath. That's just me playing with the story. I'm sure we could make a lot more out of it and could if I wanted to take more time, but I don't tonight. So I hope you can think about that a little bit. I think it's interesting how stories, and people do this all the time, stories can be taken apart and applied to situations in our lives and teach us how to act. We're offered the invitation here this evening if anyone was in need, because one of the biggest obstacles we had, one of the biggest giants we have is sin, and Jesus takes that away. That's our bigger giant. Jesus, he's our bigger giant. And he takes it away and leaves us free of those giants forever. We'll offer that invitation. We stand, sing, and close this song.